Blog Talk Radio.
Live to see it, friends. You're listening to The World Transformed 1.5 on Fast Forward Radio. I'm Phil Bauermaster, and I'm pleased to welcome you to segment 2 of The World Transformed 1.5. For those of you just joining us, this is a special interim series. We have completed our rebroadcast of the original World Transformed series as of a couple of weeks ago, and we're not quite ready to go live with The World Transformed 2, which will be coming up a little bit later this year. So in the meantime, we're presenting a series of shorter programs in which I'm just going through the complete list of transformations that we talked about in The World Transformed, the original series, with an eye to where we might be going with those in The World Transformed 2. And over last week and this week and probably the next couple of weeks, I'm just introducing those transformations, and I will be doing short podcasts that talk about each of them in a little bit more detail in the coming weeks. So last week, we started off talking about two major transformations, one life extension, and the other the introduction of true molecular nanotechnology and the profound impact that both of those will have upon our world and are already beginning to have on our world. This week, we'll explore two more transformations. In the original World Transform series, these two transformations were called Reworking the Human Architecture and Achieving Friendly Artificial Intelligence. And it is on pretty much those terms that we will address them tonight. As evidence of the fact that we're currently living through these transformations, or at least the earlier stages of them, I have major news stories from the past week that speak to each of them. Oh, for anyone listening down the road somewhere, I'm recording this program on February 19th, 2011. So let's talk about reworking the human architecture. Trying to change who and what we are is one of the hallmarks of human behavior. It is because we have this urge to be more, to be better, that entire industries exist. I'm thinking about the fitness industry, the fashion industry, the weight loss industry, the cosmetic surgery industry, the self-help industry, to name just a few. People want to look and feel their best. They want to enhance their physical, social, and sexual potential. Many are trying to fit in, others are trying to stand out, and a few are just trying to be as different as humanly possible. Even now, we're witnessing tremendous growth in the number of things that are humanly possible, and yet today we're only scratching the surface. Just this week, a news story broke about a 61-year-old woman who gave birth to her own grandson, acting as a surrogate for her daughter. Now, as amazing as this story is, that very loving and devoted 61-year-old mother/grandmother is 9 years younger than the current record holder for the oldest woman ever to give birth. A few years ago, stories like this were unimaginable. A few years from now, we will take it for granted that some women have babies in their 70s and even 80s, and maybe even later than that. In the coming years, pharmaceuticals, prosthetics, surgery, gene therapy, and human-machine interfaces all stand to make the experience of being human almost unimaginably flexible. For some time now, there's been an ongoing debate about designer babies. Today, parents-to-be have many more prenatal screening options available to them than those from a generation or two back could even imagine. As our knowledge of the human genome increases and our delivery mechanisms for genetic manipulation continue to improve, it will soon be possible, putting aside for a moment all the ethical, medical, and other concerns, it will be possible for parents to choose to include or omit just about any inherent characteristic for their children, both those that existed before and exotic new ones. This means that two brown-eyed parents will be able to produce reliably blue-eyed offspring, or for that matter, purple-eyed offspring. But designer babies are a familiar concept. As I mentioned, the debate has been going on for some time. More startling will be the emergence of designer adults. The configurable future of humanity means that many characteristics we have always assumed are assigned at birth, hair color, eye color, skin color, body size and shape, the size and shape of certain facial features and other body parts, and inherent skills and aptitudes, along with much more exotic features that have never been possible before, characteristics such as number of limbs or the presence of wings, gills, dorsal fins, antennae, will be options accessible at any point in life. And the changes won't be just cosmetic. Designer humans will benefit from augmented intelligence and vastly expanded physical capabilities. Imagine a world where the average second grader has mastered calculus and can run a 4-minute mile, where oxygen-conserving designer blood makes it possible for anyone who wants to stay underwater for 30 minutes or so at a time, where the average person, if transported back in time to our world, would be considered a linguistic, mathematical, musical, scientific, or artistic savant, or most likely all of these and more. This will be a wonderful future in terms of the number of choices it presents us, and a very challenging one from the standpoint of trying to understand who we are and what it means to be human. But then, the definition of humanity has always expanded. 10,000 years ago, we reserved the term human being for anyone who was a member of our own tribe or clan, and sometimes, maybe, the tribe or clan in the next village over, but usually just us. 1,000 years ago, much more recently than that for some, a human being was someone who shared our language, ethnicity, or religion. The idea that humanity applies to the species as a whole, and that we are in some sense all bound together as one people, is actually a fairly new and radical concept, and it will be tested by the appearance of humans who want to renounce or at least redefine much of the common heritage that made such a radical association possible. But no matter how radically different the outer form or even the inner thought processes may be, we will always find humanity where intelligence and goodwill meet. Which leads us to our second transformation. Earlier this week, a computer called Watson beat 2 human champions in the highly publicized 2-day event on the TV game show Jeopardy. At The Speculist, my co-blogger and Fast Forward Radio co-host, Stephen Gordon, provocatively asked whether this event might not be the technological singularity, which is defined as the appearance of the first greater-than-human general intelligence. Of course, this wasn't the singularity, as Stephen would be the first to tell you. But we're getting closer. 14 years ago, a computer program beat the reigning world chess champion in a 6-game match. Although an impressive feat of computer programming, skeptics maintain that Deep Blue, the chess-playing computer, displayed no real, true intelligence. It was only solving a sophisticated series of math problems, and was therefore really nothing more than a souped-up pocket calculator. This week, Watson, the Jeopardy-playing computer, showed impressive natural language processing capabilities and was answering general knowledge questions better than its human opponents could. Still, skeptics maintain that it was just doing sophisticated pattern matching and grabbing information from an unfairly overloaded database. You know, someday a computer is going to take over the world, only to have skeptics declare that taking over the world doesn't require any true intelligence. The singularity is an important concept in The World Transformed, and we'll be talking a lot more about it in upcoming segments of The World Transformed 1.5. The emergence of greater-than-human intelligence is vastly important because, as Werner Vinge explained when he first described the singularity in an essay he wrote in 1993, it is the point beyond which we can make no reliable predictions. Let me explain why that is. A greater-than-human intelligence will be able to see things we can't, make connections we never could, and easily solve problems that we see as completely intractable. Imagine applying this vast new intelligence to our concerns about energy and the environment, to the problem of poverty, to medical science, or to the resolution of conflicts. In a very short period of time, our world could become, relative to what it is now, a veritable paradise of peace, health, and abundance. I know that sounds far-fetched, maybe even a little crazy, but keep in mind that computers think roughly 1,000,000 times faster than we do. While we're spending a year trying to solve a problem, the computer gets 1,000,000 years subjective time to work on the solution. And don't forget, the computer was smarter than us to begin with. So the possible upside here is that the singularity, the appearance of the first greater-than-human intelligence, might usher in a future literally more wonderful than we can imagine. But it doesn't have to go that way. I mentioned earlier that we'll always find humanity at the convergence of intelligence and goodwill. Well, what if that computer, that first greater-than-human level intelligence, lacks goodwill? What if it's not evil, just completely indifferent to us. I know, some of you might be thinking, hey, I saw that movie. But I'm not so sure you did. You might be thinking of the Terminator movies, which gave us a scenario wherein such a machine comes online and it absolutely despises humanity and is engaged in a prolonged war with us. Or maybe you're thinking of the Matrix movies, which provide a slightly different spin, wherein the computers don't much like us, but they keep us around essentially as cattle. Sadly, both of these horrific scenarios are, if anything, a bit too optimistic. A greater than human intelligence that doesn't hate us, but that is simply indifferent to us, could wipe us out in pursuit of its own goals as casually as we add chlorine to a swimming pool, and with as little regard as we have for the billions of resulting deaths. Some wonder how we would ever allow a machine like that to amass so much power, but that fails to take into consideration what greater than human intelligence really means. A machine that really does know how to solve all our problems is one we would tend to give a lot of power to. If it told us it could fix problem A by letting it be in charge of B, or that it could provide unexpected benefit X if we just let it have the capacity to do Y, we'd be in over our heads before we even knew what happened. There's no reason to assume that these future intelligences will automatically be nice, or that they will care about us just because they are intelligence. Greater than human intelligence might, on its own, develop the kinds of ethical standards we have, or standards that we would consider significantly higher than ours. Here's hoping, but it's just a hope. Left to its own devices, that intelligence is equally likely, if not more likely, to develop ethical standards that operate with no reference to us whatsoever. Again, think of the way things stand between us and bacteria. Or that strike us as vastly immoral. Or that are completely incomprehensible to us, and that we'll never get a chance to try to understand. That's why our very existence may well depend on getting it right the first time we produce a greater than human intelligence. The first true AI might wipe us out before we ever get a chance to produce the second one. Or the new, nicer model might not ever be able to catch up with the old, indifferent one. So we need the first greater than human intelligence that appears to be sympathetic to humanity. We need for it to exist at that critical junction of intelligence and goodwill. In other words, that greater than human intelligence needs to be human, just as our super fast, super smart, variably shaped, multi-hued descendants need to be human. In the end, it all comes down to our humanity. We'll be back on Monday evening with an archive show. This is a fun one. This is our New Year's Eve show from 2007. Stephen Gordon and PJ Manny reviewing the year 2007 and making their predictions for 2008. Fun to listen to that one and see how many predictions those guys got right. I'm sure they did quite well. Coming up on Wednesday, we'll have our live show. We'll be featuring guest Jean-Sébastien Mius, who is the head of the Singularity Network group on Facebook, one of the most influential groups on Facebook concerning the kinds of issues we discuss on Fast Forward Radio, a terrific group. And I'm sure he'll be a terrific guest. Look forward to talking with him about various issues related to the singularity. I should also mention that Jean-Sébastien is the composer and artist performing our new theme music, which we featured at the beginning of the program and which you'll hear in just a moment. Coming up 1 week from tonight, I'll present segment 3 of The World Transformed 1.5, and we'll continue our discussion as we work our way through these amazing transformations that our world is currently undergoing. I hope you'll be able to join us for all of our upcoming programs. And until next time, live to see it.